Blog Talk Radio.
This is the RF Radio Show with OJ and Dreadfish.
Good evening.
I don't know what it's playing.
Good evening,
sorry,
everybody.
I don't know what it's playing.
It's 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and you're listening to Radio RF. I'm Dreadfish, here with my co-host, Itty OJ.
We've got a
great show for you tonight. And I'm not just saying that. I've also gotten it written here on my screen. Tonight, we'll be interviewing RF member Starry Nightshade on his journey through Hinduism, his religious background, and how he feels about being gay in Hinduism and in the South. We'll be taking questions, so feel free to call in or submit a question in chat. Tonight, we're also airing the first introductory episode of your new favorite sports segment, The Beatdown, by our resident Aussie sports enthusiast, Lewis Knott Miller.
All right. By the way, the call-in number is 646-200-4733. Again, that's 646-200-4733. And you can either call in via Skype or by phone. Anyways, before we go into the clip that Dresch was just talking about, I wanted to remind you that it's about that time again. Yes, that's right. It's the NPR Spring Pledge Drive. Wait, we're not NPR, and we don't have tote bags. Have a pledge drive. Please see the link below the show or on RF. Anyways, I wanted to thank Bible Student. You made the plug-in that played in front of today's show and yesterday's show, or last week's show. And we really appreciate you made it for us. Again, as Dreadfish mentioned, we have a segment today that was pre-recorded by Lewis Knott Miller. And it's going to be about sports. And it's going to be featured quite often on my show. And we wanted to let you, our friends, know that that option is available to basically all of you. Do you have an idea for a segment you'd like to regularly do on the show? You know, because all you can do is basically record a 3 to 5 minute MP3 file of you talking about that topic, and I can play it the same way I play songs on the radio. Anyways, wanted to mention some of today's hot threads, and those include, why doesn't the Bible condemn cannibalism? Does Islam need reformation? U.S. government. Zionists must end illegal occupation for beasts, countering atheism. A lawyer in California is pushing a ballot measure to legalize killing gay people. Yoga is the devil? Can totalitarianism be a moral response to climate change? To forgive or not to forgive? French cartoonist arrested in Paris for blasphemy. Oklahoma is banning atheists from getting married. And of course, ARF Radio.
Yep, so there's
anyways,
a lot of popular threads today, it looks like.
Yeah, well, you know, I think some of these have been on the list for a while, but I think they change each week. I get an email, but I'm on RF so much I don't really need an email to tell me what threads are happening.
Yeah, when I looked at them earlier, they hadn't changed too much, but a couple of them had moved up. So the top one has 241 replies, so it's a pretty good discussion right now, apparently.
Oh, by the way, guys, today is Starbucks' 20th anniversary, and for the next 5 days only, they're having Burpee Cape Frappuccinos available.
That sounds interesting. You'll have to let me know how a birthday cake frappuccino sounds, because I like frappuccinos, if that sounds pretty nasty.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't order it again. I would just like, I like mocha frappuccinos, and I'd probably never get this again. I mean, I'd take the mocha one.
Yeah, mocha's my favorite, too. Vanilla's nice, too. It kind of tastes a little bit like Kahlua.
However, the birthday cake one is a limited edition, limited time only availability, and pink.
Pink?
It's pink, yeah.
Yeah, not sure I want to drink that either.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose there's just some colors you don't want in your food.
Nope. I'm a bit of a naturalist, so I'm just kind of turned off by weird-looking colored foods anyway. So, you know. Might
well,
be just
not,
by
I mean, I like
coffee,
to eat the rainbow. It's unnaturally colored foods that it's the issue with. I'm trying to think of a naturally pink, like, what's pink and you can eat?
I don't know. I think pink is an un- Never
I have a gut in mind.
Not that it's girly. It's just, it's ugly.
Pink grapefruit. There we go. We got one.
Oh, okay. That's true. That's all right. Grapefruit is okay.
Anyways, we are featuring a song again made by an RF member. However, this artist wants to remain anonymous, and as I agreed to keep his anonymity. Or she, or it, or they. And again, we need more of you to submit music for us to play during the show, as well as art for us to display as a picture or a slide screen that plays during the episode.
So do
anyways,
we have any
let
call?
Me introduce the member formerly known as Agnostic Seeker, your friend, my friend, Starry Nightshade.
How you doing?
Hey
guys, how you doing?
Good, how are you? Thanks for calling in tonight.
Yes.
Yeah,
hey,
you're
on.
Yeah. All right, cool. Yeah, no problem, man.
Anyway, so as
you.
I mentioned in introducing you, you've changed your name since joining RF. Now, why did you change your name, and why did he pick the two names you picked?
All right, well, when I first joined RF back in January 2000, that was in my seeking phase of trying to find a faith. I'm not only trying to find a faith, but also struggling of whether or not I actually believed in a God or didn't believe in one. And I was agnostic, so, hey, agnostic seeker, that's the apex of my originality back then. As for Starry Nightshade, I eventually just got tired of Agnostic Seeker, and it's basically my current username is an amalgamation between Vincent van Gogh's painting Starry Night and the plant Starry Night and the plant Nightshade. So put those two together and you got Starry Nightshade.
Okay, idea.
So why did you want to put those two together?
I really don't know. I just like Vincent van Gogh's work, and nightshade is a pretty plant, so hey, why not?
Sounds good.
My name isn't as poetic as people tend to think it is.
So you've been
on
RF for about a year now, right?
2 years. I joined in January 2013.
Yeah, somehow I thought
okay.
It had been longer.
Nope.
Yeah, I've been here
people,
3 years.
Yeah. Did you ever have a third name? I thought you might have been one of the members who changed their name temporarily and then went back.
That was me.
Okay, I thought so.
My that third name is kind of embarrassing when I think about it. It's a pun. It was basically like, it was Dark Night of the Soul, but instead of night being, like, actual nighttime, it was Dark Night like Batman Dark Night. So Dark Night of the Soul.
Oh, that was you?
I remember that.
Yes,
yeah, I remember that now.
Yeah, it was funny for about 2 weeks, and then I requested to change it back.
I thought about changing my name, but I don't know what I would change it to, so I'm just going to leave it as Dreadfish.
I think people would forget if I changed my name. I don't know how well my fans would handle it.
It could be confusing, like, after you've been here a long time, like when Odeon, I guess is how you pronounce his old name, changed his name to Breve, and, I mean, he had been there since, like, 2009 also, and so suddenly, you know, he's got a completely different name. It's very confusing for me, so.
Yeah.
sometimes people adopt their new names rather well, like Thorbjorn, or however it's properly pronounced. Sorry if I butchered that. I have already forgotten what his name is in Hinduism was already, and I thought I never would.
And I'm probably going to butcher the pronunciation, but I believe it was Jain Narayan when he was Hindu.
Oh.
And his current name,
And
his current name, I think, is pronounced Thorbjorn or Thorbjorn. Yeah.
Mm. Yes.
I'm not particularly good with Nordic pronunciation.
And I almost want to say that you don't pronounce the TH more than you do just the T, but I'm not very good with Scandinavian sounds either, so I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So, we know now that you practice Hinduism.
Yep.
What about your religious past? What did you grow up with? What did you explore before you came to Hinduism?
Well, I'm from the South. I currently live in Georgia, and I was also raised in Georgia. And, like, virtually 90% of everyone in the South, I was raised Southern Baptist. And it's actually kind of funny. I actually live about half an hour away where the Southern Baptist Convention was founded. So there's that little bit of fun legacy, you know, create a convention to keep slavery. Anyway, so, you know, being raised Baptist, you know, we were fairly devout, I suppose. We went to church every Sunday unless someone was sick or dying. My mom put me in, like, the Wednesday night youth group for a few years, which was absolutely horrible. Let's see, read the Bible every day. I memorized a whole bunch of prayers by the time I was 3 or 4. So, all in all, I guess my family was pretty typical as far as Southern Christian families go. Let's see. So, yeah.
How did you get to the agnostic stage?
Oh, okay. It's actually kind of funny. And I guess it happens a lot because of science books, because of learning about science in school. By the time I got to 10 years old, that was when I actually started paying attention in church to what the preacher was saying. And there were some things that didn't jive pretty well with what I learned when I was younger. Because, you know, when you're younger, they really play up the fluffy side of Christianity, Jesus, the love, you know, all that good stuff. But once you actually pay attention to the pastor, especially a Southern Baptist pastor, you start realizing that, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff they kind of omit when, you know, they teach you when you're really little. Like, for example, they taught about, you know, everyone dying in the flood. Because, I mean, they taught about the flood when you're little, but they really downplay the part that, oh, everyone died, you know, in that story, aside from this one family of 8 to 10 people. They also started going over, my particular church was pretty big on the Old Testament, so they went over the Old Testament a lot. So they kind of really played up the vengeful God aspect, the fire and brimstone aspect. And they also went over the passages about Jesus, which don't really conform with the idea of, you know, the love thy neighbor messages that he always had. Like, a particular one that my old pastor liked to talk about was, you know, I did not come in to bring peace but bring a sword. You know, he really liked to bring that one up a lot. But in addition to that, I was also really, really big into science. Still am, actually. But back then, when I was little, I was really headfirst into science things. Like, you know, learning about it in school, learning about it on my own, just learning about how the world worked. And, you know, at 10 years old, I started questioning everything, like, is everything actually, you know, as the preacher is talking about, or as my parents have taught me, like, is the Bible real? Like, is God, you know, actually there? And this went on and off for about 3 years. So from about 10 to 13 years old, I kind of teetered about, yeah, you know, maybe it's actually true, maybe it's not. But when I was 13, there was a particular sermon where I heard three things that completely shut my mind off. In one sermon alone, I heard this particular pastor say that the earth was 5,000 years old, that evolution was a lie. And, well, I guess there was four things. Earth is 5,000 years old. Evolution is a lie. dinosaur bones were planted by Satan himself to test our faith in God, and the Bible was literally written by God. So when I heard all that, that's pretty much when I kind of clicked out, and it's like, yeah, you know what, this doesn't really jive well. And the thing is, I didn't go from Christian to agnostic off the bat. I went from Christian to, like, hardcore atheist, like, hardcore, I'm going to quote the God's illusion to all you people and not realize the irony of doing so atheist. And it was like that for quite a while. From 13 till about when I graduated high school, I was, you know, kind of a jerk about being an atheist. Like one of the highlights of my day was going to Christians that I knew in school and telling them how stupid they were. So this went on and on and on for a little while, but once I actually graduated high school and went into college, and I actually began, you know, stopped being a jerk to, you know, religious people, and I actually started reading philosophy, history, psychology, the humanities, both on my own and in classes, that's when I thought to myself, you know, maybe I'm as arrogant and self-righteous being an atheist as many religious people are. So it was actually at that moment, you know, about a semester or two after I entered college, where I thought, you know, maybe I'm more agnostic than I am atheist or religious.
Well, first off, you answered my next question before I had a chance to answer it or ask it, and that was about how long did that phase go on for?
Let's see. The atheist phase was about 5 or 6 years, and the agnostic atheist phase, or the strong agnostic phase, was from when I was about 20 to 21 or 22. So about 7, 8 years overall.
Okay. Anyways, I'd like to take this moment and to do a message from our sponsors. How you doing? That goes out to all the ladies of RF from Wiry. Anyways, I'd like to introduce our newest feature, The Beat Down by Lewis Knott Miller.
G'day RF, and welcome to the very first installment of your new favorite online sports segment, The Beatdown, with me, Lewis Knott Miller. Let's face it, for most of you guys, it's probably the only sports segment you've ever listened to. Take heart, I'm fully planning on looking past the scoreboard to some of the sports issues you might actually be interested in. Besides, there's worse things to do with your time than get a slice of Aussie wisdom, right? Anyway, OJ and Dreadfish were kind enough to offer me a slot here on Radio RF to talk sports, and I happily accepted. I'm not one to turn down a captive audience, which some of you might be aware of. But in a rare moment of maturity by my standards, I decided to consider you guys, my audience, in determining how I'd run this. So what I decided was to pick a topic loosely related to sport, hopefully one that resonates with the thousands of people that are no doubt listening right now, rather than just rambling on about sports scores and strategies that only I care about, let's face it. So I'd also like to encourage you all to check in on my RF thread, The Beatdown, and offer me some suggestions for future shows and any comments. Hopefully you can cut me a little slack, given this is the first episode. And any expressions of you know, undying love for me, all comments are welcome. We'll cover topics on this show like gender, drugs, and pure sports gossip, but we'll use the sometimes self-absorbed lens of the sports world to do that. So today's topic, I've gone for a bit of a cheapie, I guess. I'm going for prayer in sport. I'm not going to go with the normal take, though, in terms of goal line celebrations or talking about people thanking God after they score a winning basket. Instead, what I want you to do is to cast your mind back to the year 1999, and I'm going to tell you a little story that I hope is thought-provoking. So, basketball in the late 1990s. Think Michael Jordan Gatorade ads, short shorts, and a simpler time when I had more hair and a couple less kids. It's a long time ago, folks, in the year that I met my wife. It's also before Debater Slayer discovered Hello Kitty. So this is seriously history here. I need you all to picture this. Doc Rivers, who's now the coach of the LA Clippers, was first-year coach of the Orlando Magic. He steps into his locker room and he sees the normal pre-game prayer routine that many or probably even all the teams followed at that time. But one of his players, Tariq Abdul-Wahad, was not involved. Instead, Tariq was sitting back, crossing his arms and not partaking with the rest of the team. The very next game, Rivers decided to make a brief speech to his team on the matter. This is what he said. "We're no longer praying. I want you all to take a minute. Everybody close their eyes. We can all have different religions. We have different gods. We can just take a minute to compose. If you guys want to pray individually, you can do it. If you want to meditate, do whatever you want." After the next game, Wahad walked into Rivers' office and gave him a hug, and he said it was the first time he'd felt like his Muslim religion had been respected in all his time in sport, and he committed to giving Rivers everything he had on the court as a show of respect, mutual respect. So I want you to consider that and then contrast it with the following different approach by a different NBA coach. Before training camp with the Chicago Bulls and the Los Angeles Lakers, Phil Jackson would line his players up in a row on the baseline and say the following: "God has ordained me to coach you young men, and I embrace the role I've been given. If you wish to accept the game I embrace and follow my coaching as a sign of your commitment, step across that line." Now, for me, I tend to see that as a little bit self-serving in terms of what Phil Jackson is saying, given that he generally claims to be a Zen Buddhist. But it did get me thinking. There's coaches in the league who are ordained ministers. So Mark Jackson, who recently coached the Golden State Warriors, as an example, shouldn't he have the right to freely express the faith which he believes has led him to success? And if someone is convinced of their faith, as many of these people are, and they believe that that faith has led them to be a good person and a good role model, etc., doesn't it then demand that they offer this benefit to their team, who, after all, they're tasked with bringing together to try and achieve ultimate success? Now, my way of thinking on this is as follows. Sometimes we all need to place ourselves in the position of a minority and just think about the world from there through their eyes. It doesn't mean that we're caving to a noisy pressure group or that we're subjugating our own beliefs, and it doesn't even particularly relate to religion, especially. It's more a general life comment. Doc Rivers suggested the following, which I think is a sensible comment on this. If it's 75% who believe one way, that's to me 25% that don't. To me, if it's 95%, the 5% deserve the same treatment as everybody else. He then went on to say, and I just think that's what we need to do. If it was church, then that's different. This is not church. This is our jobs. Okay. So none of us as a minority group should feel compromised in just doing our jobs. A Christian in a non-Christian country should be able to pray before a game or before starting work. A Muslim in a Christian country should be able to pray in their own manner too. And from a self-serving point of view, an atheist shouldn't be forced to pray or run the risk of not being seen as a team player. River's actions make perfect sense to me, and Phil Jackson's, quite frankly, don't. But on the flip side, Phil Jackson has won 11 rings as a coach. Doc Rivers has one. So maybe there is something in Phil Jackson's approach. So I'm interested in what your take is. Jump into my thread on RF, which is RF Radio The Beatdown, and let me know your thoughts on this matter, or any other comments on the segment, including future topics you might like to hear an Aussie take on. I'm going to try to bring in some guests, so it's not just my voice for each of these, maybe a guest tipster each week, talk about some of the upcoming sports events. And to my mind, there's two big tournaments on at the moment, and I'll close with a quick wrap on those. So the first one is the NCAA basketball tournament. I am a huge Notre Dame fan, so anyone that wants to talk to me about college sports, that's where I'm going to be coming from. I'm fighting Irish all the way. I think that we've fallen the Elite Eight, though, and I think Kentucky will win the tournament. No surprise there. They're hot favourites. They're just too big in the middle. Their interior defenders are too good, and they have enough shooters to support those guys. The other tournament is the Cricket World Cup. So New Zealand is in the final. They're awaiting the winner of Australia and India by the time this goes to air. I am tipping Australia to beat India in a very tough match on a Dust Bowl wicket. I think whichever of those two teams gets through will eventually win the World Cup. I don't think New Zealand can continue their good form playing in Australia. I think they've benefited from playing on some very small pitches in New Zealand. So Kentucky to win the NCAA tournament and Australia to win the Cricket World Cup. Okay, that's it for my first show, guys. So thanks for paying attention. And like I said, jump in, any comments, RF Radio, The Beatdown. And I promise I'll try to do better next time. Okay. Lewis, not Miller, signing out.
We promise the same thing at the end of every episode we do as well. We will do better next time. You know why? We love you, RF. We love you. Again, I want to thank Lewis Notmiller for submitting that section, and I look forward to the further installments. And again, if you have an idea for your own installment, please contact either Dreadfish or I, and we can get you on our Radio RF as well. Anyways, I had mentioned we had a fundraiser, but didn't post the link before. The link is now posted at the in the comments section of this page that you're viewing this off of. I'm also posting it in the chat room, and it is posted on RF on several locations. Again, you can ask Dreadfish or I for it. Anyways, Dread, you had some questions for Starry Nightshades.
Right, and if you're just joining us, we're interviewing Starry Nightshade. So we've talked about your past a little bit, your religious past. You grew up Christian, went through some time being an atheist, and then an agnostic. So now you're Hindu. How did you come to Hinduism?
Well, first I got to preface that my particular transition from agnostic to Hindu is actually relatively common. When I was agnostic, I still didn't believe in God. I was still an agnostic non-theist, so I looked into non-theistic religions. And the very first religion I gave a chance after I stopped my phase of hating religion was Buddhism, which, you know, which is relatively common anyway for a lot of people. So I did my thing as a Buddhist after a while, with various intersections of Taoist, Confucianist, naturalistic pagan, which every time I tried paganism, that never lasted very long. I don't really have the best experiences with the pagan community, but that's another thing entirely. Anyway, so going through as a Buddhist, which was pretty much what I identified as for about a year and a half to 2 years, I noticed I was drawn towards, like, tantric Buddhism, Buddhism that had layers of existence and various gods and spirits and things that you invoke. And for a while, I was a Tibetan Buddhist. That's what I was for most of the time. Then, and Tibetan Buddhism incorporated a lot of Hinduism. So since there's no Tibetan Buddhist temple in my area, I found myself going to the Hindu temple on a very regular basis. And eventually that turned into, let me ask, you know, the priest about Hinduism. Let me ask, you know, the congregation about Hinduism. And over the course of a while, I eventually found myself tending more towards Hinduism than I ever did Buddhism. But the one thing that prevented me from fully going into Hinduism was the fact that it's a very, very theistic religion for the vast majority of the time. So after, I guess contemplation, after thinking about it, after reading more about various philosophies, I came to the conclusion that I did believe in some god of some sort. And then I suppose I always believed in it, even during my atheist phase. Like, I suppose in the back of my mind I always believed in something. It's just that growing up as a Southern Baptist, and even just growing up in the Western world where Judeo-Christianity is so ingrained in our culture, I only thought of God as the classical monotheistic, it's one transcendent entity separate from its creation and will always be separate. Whereas when I first went into Hinduism, it was the idea that God and creation are not separate. And I guess I always had felt, I guess that was always what I believed in, or always felt like I should have believed in. But during my time as an atheist, the only God concept I thought was there was the Jewish, Christian, Islamic notion of God. I had no idea that any other concept of God existed. But when I looked into Hinduism, I realized that at least the first concept of God that I ran into was something that really resonated with me.
So are you a polytheist now, or are you What form of theism would you see yourself as then? Pantheism?
Not really. I think, like, before I get into it later, because I feel like I will talk about it later, the simplest way I can explain it is that I'm a blend of panentheism and henotheism.
And what?
You know, okay, you know, panentheism is that God is both within and beyond creation. Henotheism is that you believe that multiple gods exist, but you only center your devotion on either one or a small handful of them. You recognize and maybe revere others, but your direct worship only is centered on only one or a few. So I guess in the technicality, I sort of am polytheistic, but I only worship a small handful of gods.
So would that be a particular, I mean, which particular sect of Hinduism is that? Or do you kind of do your own brand?
Okay, I guess before I talk about that, I'll just go through a very, very quick overview of what I identified when I came through Hinduism. When I first started off as Hindu, I was a Advaita Vedantin, which is extremely common for atheists or Buddhists to go into when they first go into Hinduism. And Advaita Vedanta is non-dualism. God and creation are not separate, and anything else beyond that is illusion. From that, I went to Shaivism, Shaktism, where Shiva and Shakti were what I worshipped. And now I'm initiated into Sri Vaishnavism, Ramanuja's of Sri Sampradaya.
And that's Vishishtadvaita, right?
Yes. So basically I went from Advaitin to sort of Dvaitin, to sort of dualistic, to now Vishishtadvaitin.
All right. So you say Sri Vaishnavism is what you follow now?
Yes. And actually, the thing is, Sri Vaishnavism is so complicated that I'm really going to have to try my best to condense it all down. But before I do that, I just want to say one more thing that I forgot to mention was, even in my days as a Shaiva, I was always interested in Vaishnavism, but I kind of had a bias against it, and it was solely because every time I thought of Vaishnavism, I thought of ISKCON or the Hare Krishnas. And at face value, Vaishnavism seemed way too similar to Christianity. So I guess I subconsciously was choosing the schools of thought that were furthest away from what I consider too similar to my old religious path.
That makes sense. When I explored Hinduism in the past, I also had a similar, turnoff towards Vaishnavism, especially the Hare Krishna stuff and all that. But it was a little too similar for me to the Abrahamic religions.
And the thing is, I actually don't hate ISKCON. I don't agree with a lot of their philosophy, and I don't agree with how they've handled themselves politically, for lack of a better word. But you know, I don't hate them. I don't dislike them. But they just weren't for me. You know, because I actually looked into ISKCON for a little while, but the turnoff was how, especially nowadays, for lack of a better term, anti-gay their philosophy in many ways is, or how non-gay friendly it is. I mean, Hinduism in general, at least the culture it comes from, can be summed up as not very gay-friendly, but ISKCON seems to take it to another level.
And it's my impression that, in the past at least, there was not so much of an aversion to homosexuality in India until some of the outside influences from the Middle East and the Christians in Europe.
Yeah. I'd like to say that I'm not a scholar, so I cannot definitively say anything from one way or another, but that seems to be the general consensus, was that in India in antiquity, like ancient India, was, if not necessarily pro gay was at least neutral to it. It was kind of a live and let live idea. But over the centuries with the Mughal invasion and British colonialism and Victorian ideals just, you know, implemented into their zeitgeist, the idea of homosexuality as being a terrible thing really started to come forth.
So, in general, what is the view? Is there a consistent view towards homosexuality in Hinduism? I mean, there, you know, there are some basic views that are shared by all parts of Hinduism, but there's, you know, it's obviously very broad. In your experience, what have you faced in Hinduism being gay?
Well, to answer your first question, is there a consistent view? The answer is yes and no. Because I'm sure, as you know, Hinduism is so vast, you cannot pinpoint a single belief to anyone. Like you said, there might be some underlying beliefs or influences or things like that, but not all Hindus are going to believe in the same thing, even Hindus within the same sect or school or lineage. But to answer your question, I guess for nowadays, unfortunately, especially in India, in rural India, it's not liked at all. It's considered, like, I've heard a couple of Indians say it's an abomination. I've heard a lot of Indians, especially older Indians, say that it's a Western disease that was brought over by the British. I've heard a lot say that we need to get rid of the Western influences, including homosexuality, so that India can become pure again. But like anyone else, you know, India has 1.3 to 1.5 billion people, so there are varying degrees of what the opinion is. And based on my experience, it seems that the majority don't like it, but it also seems like there are a lot more who either do support it or are just neutral. Because in my experience, to answer your second question, it's mostly neutrality. I truly think that most Indians don't care either way. Because the thing about Indians is they tend to be, again, in my experience, they tend to be very private to begin with. And sexuality is something that you just don't talk about, whether it's gay or straight sexuality. Especially at temples.
How does that compare to living in the South?
What's that?
How does that compare to living in the South?
Being gay in the South?
Yeah, as opposed to being gay in India.
Honestly, being gay in the South is not that difficult. It's like there are some people who try to really, you know, amp up how horrible it is to be gay down here. And to be fair, yes, being gay in a red state does have its challenges. But for the most part, again, in my experience, most people don't care. Most people kind of have a live and let live attitude. Maybe not the politicians who are really trying to implement anti-LGBT laws into action, but just like regular everyday people. Most are neutral. Some support, some are against, but I would say that most just don't care one way or the other. So my experience in being gay in the South is very similar to being gay as a Hindu. I don't talk about it. I don't really show it or flaunt it, and not because I'm ashamed of it, but it's just like being gay is such a minor part of my identity to begin with. Like who I have sex with is such... It's probably the most boring thing about what makes me me. As such, I don't really discuss it with people who are not my friends or family. And as such, I don't run into any inherent issues in the Indian community or in the South in general.
Okay. Anyways, I'd like to take this opportunity to play a track that has been given to us. And again, this has been given to us by an anonymous member. And again, you too can have your music played on RF. Just submit it to the Dreadfish Rye in MP3 format, and I can upload it to the show and play your music, your band's music, etc. Free plugins to all musicians. This plugin also extends to artists. We're looking for paintings, photos, drawings to display as the cover photo for the episode. And I think we can also extend this offer to those who write art too. You know, maybe poetry, short stories, you know, something you could recite on an episode would also be cool. And again, like we had the sports thing today, we like to have other people submit ideas for segments they could produce. And again, you just simply record yourself speaking on a topic for like 3 to 5 minutes, send it to me, and I'll play it like I play music. Now, here is what is only known as track 14.
Thank you.
again. That was track 14 by Anonymous. Thank you, Anonymous. Thank you. And you too could be anonymous, except I'll actually say your name and the name of the songs if you just give me some music to play. You too, artist. Anyways, we wanted to invite guests to call in at 646-200-4733. Again, that's 646-200-4733. You can say hello to the show, say hello to Starry. Maybe you have some questions for our guest today. Again, the number is 646-200-4733. Anyways, earlier you had said that you only worship a very small amount of gods. Which ones do you worship and why?
Okay. So, in Sri Vaishnavism, given the name, Vishnu is considered the supreme god. So, first and foremost, he is on high. He is, you know, the one that you go to. He's the one who created everything, that all things come through, that all things will return to, so on and so forth. So, Vishnu is one. And as well as his avatars. And unlike a lot of other Vaishnava schools, like ISKCON, ISKCON believes that Krishna is the original source, and then became Vishnu. And then there are other avatars, but those other avatars are only partial, whereas when Krishna came down as himself, it's considered the most whole. In Sri Vaishnavism, all the avatars are considered equal, and if you pray to any of them, you're praying to Vishnu. Of his avatars, in addition to Krishna, because Krishna is going to be involved no matter what, the avatar I pray to and worship the most is Lord Narasimha. Narasimha is the fourth avatar of Lord Vishnu. He's the half-man, half-lion who came to kill a demon king in order to protect a devotee. And aside from them, the other main one is Hanuman, along with Ram and Sita. Also Lakshmi, and I wouldn't necessarily say worship, but I certainly do revere Lord Shiva as well as Lord Ganesh.
Okay, so, I believe, Dredd, you had some questions about terms I can't pronounce.
Okay.
Well, I was going to ask first, which is the primary, which deva would be the primary object of your devotion?
Narasimha, without a doubt. Like, before, anytime before I go into worship, I always pray to Narasimha first. And he's the one I always go to. And he's the one who I give, he's the object of my devotion.
So what does he represent?
First and foremost, he's a protector. He represents God protecting his devotees. He represents, in my opinion, the will to survive, going out, destroying injustice, destroying evil, for lack of a better word. I really can't explain it without sounding too mushy, but when I'm in Narasimha's presence, everything just feels right. And to be fair, I also feel the same with Lakshmi, because in my particular lineage, Lakshmi is not an intermediate between man and God. Lakshmi is actually considered equal to Vishnu. So Lakshmi, in addition to Narasimha and Vishnu in his original form, I'd say are the primary objects overall. But as far as a personal form goes, it's Narasimha.
All right. We have a question from Poeticus, and let's see. His question is, Starry, why are you so awesome?
Why am I so awesome? Because God made me this way, and we can't question God's will, can we?
Good answer.
I can, or at least would.
So, you're Sri Vaishnava. I guess we know that this is panentheistic in nature, and we said this is a Vishish Advaita. So just to go with the basics, because I know there's a lot to this, and we don't have a lot of time left, but what's the basics What are the basics of it?
So here's the basic ontological stance of Vicious Advaita. So as I mentioned before, I was Advaitin, which is God and creation are one. Your Atman and Brahman are not separate. Any separation is an illusion. There's also Dvaita. Dvaita is, you know, your Atman is dependent on Brahman or God, in that you will never, ever become one with him. You are not the same. You two are fundamentally different. And Vishishadvaita is somewhere in the middle. It's in the middle of we have a spark of God within us, like we are of God's essence, but we also have something unique that makes us us. Let me give an analogy, a very quick analogy. It's an analogy of a face and an eye, or a head and an eye. So to an Advaitin, the relationship between the eye and the head is they're both the same. No matter what, any separation between the eye and the head is going to be illusion. To a Vishishadvaita, Advaitin, it's going to be, yes, the eye is a part of the head, but it also has its own unique characteristics. Whereas to a Dvaita, the eye and the head are completely separate, no matter what.
All right.
So does that make any sense whatsoever?
Yes. For the last one, did you mean to say for Advaitin?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, for the last one, for the eye and the head are not the same. That's Advaitin POV.
Okay. Let's see. Do we have any calls?
But I did have a question. How do you express your Hinduism on a day-to-day basis? Like, you know, I see Christians a plethora in this country, so I kind of have an idea how they express themselves on a regular day-to-day basis. But how do you express yourself on a regular day-to-day basis in a way that's unique due to your belief in Hinduism?
Well, I used to express it a lot more. I have an Om pendant, and I also have a Lakshmi Narayan or a Lakshmi Vishnu pendant that I used to wear all the time. But I don't wear it as much anymore. I think a lot of it has to do with not drawing attention to myself. But I do have pendants that I sometimes wear. There have been a few times where I wore tilak or a forehead marking out in public. But that was a little too uncomfortable, so I no longer do that. But I guess really the biggest ways I express my Hinduism is just through my practice, just through my religious life. You know, going to temple, adopting vegetarianism, you know, adopting the rituals that one has to perform when they're initiated into this lineage. Those in and of themselves are how I express my Hinduism. Not really so much an external trapping, which distinguishes me from a non-Hindu.
So, in your experience, you've said you have gone to temple regularly. How has your experience been being accepted or relating to Hindus who have been born Hindu and who have a family history of being Hindu and that sort of thing?
It's actually kind of funny. You know, there is the cultural barrier. You know, being a Western American, or just being Western in general, especially for the older aunties and uncles who are from India, you know, I can't really relate to them on a cultural level, but we still have a connection. Like, the response has been one of two things. Most are either neutral because, you know, they tend to keep, it's generally thought of as you keep your business to yourself no matter what. So it's either most have been neutral, but some have been overwhelmingly supportive of me adopting Hinduism into my life, going to temple on a regular basis. There's been more than one occasion where an older ama or appa or auntie or uncle has come to me and said that you know more about Hinduism than my son, daughter, grandchild, niece, nephew knows. You know, that this little white boy who came to temple randomly 3 years ago knows more about the faith than people born into it.
It seems in general Hindus seem to be pretty accepting of others. I remember when I was in Malaysia about 3 years ago, I was, in Malaysia, there's a large Indian population, and I had gone to the store with my dad, and I was wearing Rudraksha, And one of the ladies who worked there is Indian, asked me why, and she was seemed to be, you know, happy and surprised, you know, to see that I was wearing Rudraksha. I explained I was actually Buddhist, but I really liked Shiva and all of that. But she seemed completely positive about it. So it was really nice, too, because as you may be able to relate, in the South, there's not necessarily a whole lot of other people who share Dharmic beliefs or anything like that. So it was nice to have a moment of recognition, I guess, of relating in some way that you don't really get with other people.
And I agree. And actually, now that you mentioned it, the only negative experience was, and this is when I first started going a while back, at temple, I'll say namaste or hello, and people will say hello back to be polite. There's one time I said hello to an older man, and he gave me a dirty look and walked away. So far in my 3 years, that's the only negative experience I've had. But in general, most Indians are either like, eh, or are really happy that I know about their faith and I'm sharing it with them. And also to answer or to piggyback off of something else you said, yeah, being where I am, there's not a lot of Dharmic religions around. There's a couple of Hindu temples. There's a couple of Buddhist temples, and we have a Gurdwara way out of the way in a suburb area. Which in addition to being isolated, is relatively sparse. I think we only have about 100 Sikhs in the entire area.
Listen, I'm gonna have to stop you there.
Yep.
We're nearly out of time, and I wanted to thank you for being on the air, and I wanted to let people know that Starry has agreed to be on the show again in the future to talk more directly about Hinduism, in a more academic sense, I suppose. And
yep.
We look forward to that. And I hope we get a lot of you other people to call in. So I understand the topic is very vast, and there's a multitude of different expressions and opinions on this. So we'll have a more detailed timeline posted in the near future of when this will happen, so perhaps other ones can call in and participate in that episode.
Sounds good.
Thank you very much for being on today. It's been fun.
Glad to be here. Glad that you were willing to have me.
Of right. course.
Thank you so
it
much, guys.
Yep.
All right. Thank you so much, guys. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Talk to you later.
Care.
Yep. Bye.
Anyways, we have an episode planned for Monday, and we will be interviewing Orbit about general anthropology topics, kind of an anthropology 101. And we suspect that we'll be doing like a multi-part series with Orbit on multiple topics, anthropology and religion, perhaps more detailed topics done about anthropology, or it's from an anthropological viewpoint, as well as just personal interests and opinions. Again, please, we need more music, we need more art, and we need more segments. Please visit our thread, give us feedback, let you know what you thought, what more you want from us, and how we can improve the show. Any closing remarks, Thread?
Well, I think that about, rounds it out. So thank you for listening to Radio RF. I'm Dreadfish.
And I'm Mita OJ. Good night, good morning, good afternoon, good everything.
Good now.